Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. We have today with us again Mariam Jacobs, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands, who is back with us to discuss mass incarceration and the need for changes in the U.S. courts and penal system, along with many other issues. And I want to apologize for coming on late. I'm telling you, this has not been a week for me, and I'm sure that many of you have these kind of days and weeks. But anyway, I hope we're back on track now, and I apologize for starting the show late. We also have another guest with us. So can we have our guests introduce themselves? Mariam, we'll start with you.
Oh, hello. I am Mariam Jacobs. I am from the Netherlands. In my country, I work in the penal system with incarcerated people on rehabilitation. I'm also writing a book about the United States prison system and how it's embedded in society there. And I'm graduating from my master's philosophy, and I also work as a therapist with people who live at home and suffer from all kinds of life issues.
And I welcome you, Mariam. As always, everyone is so interested in always in what you have to say because you have so much wisdom and knowledge in the areas that you speak on. I wanted to ask the other guest, 484, to please introduce yourself. Well, I guess we have someone that's on just to listen. Okay, so anyway, we were talking about some of the things that Mariam does, and she's been very active in the areas of the criminal justice reform and prison issues. And again, she is a psychosocial therapist who talks a lot about the causes of crime as well. And there's so much going on in this country and around the world with the penal system, and there needs to be change. There needs to be change in the criminal justice system. There needs to be change in the parole system. There needs to be change in the courts, because none of these things are working. So we're going to get right into this. And again, Mariam, I welcome you on the show again. And I'd like to hear more, and I'm sure the audience wants to hear more about your philosophy with all of these things that are going on around the country with mass incarceration and the issues at hand.
What I see in the United States is that the penal system, the prison system, is in fact based on dehumanization, and I think that is the most important reason why it has come into a negative spiral downwards. And what I also see is that when incarcerated people do not get the chance to get rehabilitated, it also affects the victim, whether the victim is conscious of that or not, and it affects the society itself. So it's in fact a negative spiral for all three parties, and that's all connected. So because I think the main problem is when you do not give incarcerated people the chance to rehabilitate, he will never learn to deal with his own responsibility. So what you see is when people get out of the system, they still cannot handle responsibility, and the chance to fall back is very huge then. And that's what you also see back in the high numbers of recidivism. In the Netherlands, that picture is different. We see our incarcerated people are as citizens, like we all are, of our society. So we are responsible for their process of healing. And we want that because it will also be safe for us in society. And I think for the victim, it's very important that a victim sees that the offender who has hurt him or her is going through this process of insight and can take responsibility, full responsibility for the crime he has committed, and can feel guilt on a very honest way, and that helps to heal the victim. Then you also get to the point that restorative justice is a true process of healing instead of just a social desirable thing to do, what you see now many times. The words I am sorry or I forgive you are words that we can easily say from our minds, but it should be said from the heart. And before we can say that and feel that from the heart, we first have to heal ourselves inside.
And there's so many people in prison, I find, that are remorseful, that have spent years and years thinking of their mistakes and remorseful about it, and still not being able to be free, or not being able to be given, you know, a second chance to show society that they can be productive. There's so much of these things that goes on, and it's really sad because the time does not fit the grind. I find that sometimes to be the case in a lot of areas where people are being punished way beyond the initial crime that they've committed, especially when they're nonviolent crimes, when no one has been hurt and people are still inside serving life and life without sentences, whether it be for addictions or, you know, other nonviolent offenses. And we have to look at even those who have committed a violent offense, you know, a first-time offense, what condition were they in? You know, some of these things that you mentioned as far as the feeling of, you know, of remorse and actually what they've done and, you know, to deal with it and trying to accept it and trying to be responsible at the same time for what they've done.
Yeah, and I think that somebody who, you know, if you go back to the moment of the crime, at the moment somebody commits a crime, he doesn't feel responsibility, because otherwise he would not commit a crime. So something has been gone wrong in his development of responsibility. So that has to be restored or rehabilitated. Therefore, what we do in the Netherlands and what should be done in the United States is that the length of a sentence should not only be connected to the crime, but mostly to the progress in rehabilitation. If somebody is fully rehabilitated, is able to really feel the responsibility, the remorse about his crime, has paid his debt, then he should return in society again. That's what's not happening in the United States, because in the United States only the crime is punished, not the person. On the other hand, it also means that an offender who is convicted and sent to prison, he has a choice. If he is not able or is not willing to go through this process of rehabilitation, it means he cannot be released anymore. That's what we also see in the Netherlands. Because this process of rehabilitation, it sounds very nice and it sounds very soft with psychiatrists and psychologists, but it's a very, very intense and difficult process where offenders have to accept to be confronted with their own issues, their own psychological issues, their own trauma, but also they have to face themselves. They have to look into their own eyes, see the offender in himself. So that process is not, that's the punishment here. You know, what you see in law in the United States, you see a separation between punishment and rehabilitation, but it should not be separated. The punishment is the rehabilitation, and that should be written in law. So, and if an offender is not willing to do that process or too lazy or whatever, then he cannot be released. That I think is the right way for rehabilitation of all three of the parties. So rehabilitation of himself, the victim, and society, because also society has a scar from the crime that has been committed in that society. And I think rehabilitation is the only road, and we see that because the current prison system is a disaster. It's a real disaster. It's a shame. Voting rights away, seeing prisoners as less as citizens, that's barbaric, because we cannot say anymore that the United States is a democracy, because it takes the voting rights away from their own citizens. And that's something what you don't see in Europe. And that also is very dangerous, because if you take away the voting rights and other civil rights, then automatically prisoners are seen as less than citizens. Well, in the law, they are less than citizens, and so they are also approached and less than human. And so it's a very dangerous thing to do.
That's the truth. There's so much craziness. You know, I want to bring on a woman. Her name is Holly Thomas. Holly Alston. And Holly lost her son to suicide after coming out of prison for a short time. And I wanted Holly to talk a little bit about her situation while we're on the show, to let people know exactly what happens when people are incarcerated. So, Holly, if you're on with us, can you please introduce yourself and talk a little bit about Holly, can you hear us? She is on with us, and she did talk about her son's case.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you now.
All right. Also with me is my youngest son, Kai. And I don't know if Kai, would you mind if he spoke a little bit about his brother?
Please have him do it. I know that Holly mentioned that both the mother and the son have been having a hard time dealing with the loss of Terrell, her older son. But we have an echo in the background, Holly. I don't know if it's coming from your speaker or maybe something else.
For me, it's difficult to hear.
Can you hear me better now?
Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. Hi, everyone. I'm Holly's son, and I decided to come here today because I felt it would be good to add my two-piece into the situation. So, as we know, the system is very, very...
I'm sorry. Can we have your name? I forgot. Yes. What is your name again,
honey? Kai.
Okay, Kai. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. So, my mom told me that that she was going to be joining this thing, and I was like, well, I might as well join it, right? So here I am. And as we know, the system is very, very corrupt, and... I don't think these people, they don't think about the impact that not only does it have on a victim, because I believe that these, at this point, I really believe that the jail, it probably has more innocent people than bad people. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. That's just my opinion, because you hear stories all the time about people being arrested for crimes they didn't commit, and that's exactly what happened to my oldest brother, and what has happened to him, I wouldn't even wish it upon my worst enemy, because it was terrible. It was corrupt, and it has a massive toll on my family till this day. I remember back in the day, back when I was still in middle school, he took his life because, the system was just being so harsh on him, and then I couldn't even focus on my schoolwork because all I could think was about what happened to my brother, and not even me hanging out with my friends, that didn't even ease the pain. Like, I would often go home, try to play a video game to try to keep my mind off of things, and that's the only thing I could think of about how life has been so cruel to my brother. So, like I said, we know that the system is very corrupt, and I think it's it's definitely a blessing that we have this platform to try to spread awareness of the corruption that happens in this life. Are you still there?
Yes, I'm sorry. I didn't think...
Did you think?
Yes. Terrell was not inside that long either, was he?
Terrell was in prison for 7 years.
Okay.
And he took his life. He was on August 8th, he was released from retreat prison. State prison, and on by the on August 20th, he had committed suicide.
So he hadn't even been out a month?
No, not even a month.
Please carry on.
Yeah. So, like, you know, Kai, I had asked Kai, and he was thinking of, you know, saying something. Kai didn't get a chance to grow up with his brother. In fact,
yeah, and sorry that I cut my mother off, but I just thought about something, and it's crazy because he was very young when he was arrested. Like, his whole 20s was wasted, and, like, people say that your 20s is supposed to be the best time of your life, so the best, what should have been the best moment of his life was wasted because these people are just very evil people that like to ruin people's lives. So that's why I said before, you know, I'm really happy that we have a platform to spread awareness, because this is one of those things that people don't really talk about. It's one of those things where it's like, oh, you hear on the news, people don't really do their research and understand, like, oh my God, this person is innocent. And the system, they're just throwing them away. They're treating them like they're animals or something. And that is wrong, because I believe as human beings, we all have a chance to prove that we can be someone. And if we, yeah, and just like my mom says, he was very gentle. Like, he wouldn't even hurt a fly. And it's really not fair that people get arrested for these alleged crimes, because that person could have did something. You never know. They could have had a family. They could have been a president. So many wasted opportunities because of the corruption. So yeah, I'm going to hand my mom the phone. I just wanted to say that real quick.
Well, I think that the whole prison system, whatever, you know, whether somebody is guilty or innocent or whatever somebody has done, the prison system itself is... it's a barbaric system, and it only serves the million-dollar industry. It's a really shame that the way people are dehumanized, the way, you know, what you see in the news about the food, about healthcare, it's crazy that we even have to discuss these things because they exist, that it happens. We never have the right to dehumanize another human being, not ever.
Are you guys there?
I am here, but the line is very bad.
Yeah, I don't know.
I can hear you now clearly.
Yeah, I've been on platforms trying to get Terrell's story out. The one thing that he had mentioned the first year that he was in prison was to tell people that he wasn't the monster that they portrayed him, and he really wanted his name to be cleared. So over the years, that's what I've been trying to do.
We have people in prison for all different reasons, and that's why I always say prison should not be stereotyped. But if we lived in a halfway decent society, where people looked at all angles and all situations and all circumstances. We have an echo really bad, Holly. I think it's from your end.
Okay.
But we have a major problem in this country because people don't take a chance or even consider what the other person was going through at the time that they were incarcerated or at the time that they committed their offense. And again, I always say, we have to be sympathetic to victims, but we also have to look at the victims at the time of some of these offenses, what they were going through. Because some of these people, at the time that they committed their offenses, were not rational, or they were not themselves. Something interfered with their whole being, what they were doing. And why I always say prisons need to be replaced, because prisons are being used as hospitals. People are going into these prisons, they're being mistreated, they're being deprived, denied, and all of these other things, provoked, harassed, tormented, tortured, and they're released into the streets. And then something major happens. So even if we incarcerate them into hospitals where they should be, your son was seriously ill. He was ill. And things were happening. And unfortunately, he should have been receiving treatment prior to even going into the prison and coming out and doing what he did, he has to be feeling really, really, really depressed.
Yes. Can you hear us okay now? I switched over to my computer.
Yes, we can hear you now. Miriam, are you still there?
Yeah, I am still here.
You have any feedback or anything you want to say in regards to Terrell's situation and Holly and her son's situation now?
Yeah, I think it's what I said. I think it's very difficult. I have 4 children myself, and if I think that one of them would end up in that system where they only try to break people instead of rehabilitate them. So I can't even imagine how that must be for you being a mother.
The other thing that really bothers me, it was based on a lie. The woman lied on Terrell. We had reported her to Children and Youth, and they believed our story. They went there, they took the kids, and a whole year later, the Eastern police said that I had to bring my son in. They had a warrant out for his arrest, and I wish I had never did, because there was never any warrant. And they literally kept him at county prison for 5.5 years, and then somehow they were able to give him another 2 years at state prison. So during that time, the first year in, Terrell was held down by other prisoners. They hit his head repeatedly with a wooden dustpan brush, which has Terrell lost part of his vision and his hearing, and he still had a slight dent where his skull had been beaten in. Towards the end of the 5 years, Kai wanted me to mention, they put Terrell in with other prisoners that had the worst cases, murderers, people who were with the Ku Klux Klan, you name it. And this one guy who had full-blown AIDS spit in Terrell's face and his eye. And Terrell's asking for medical attention, and instead they threw him in the hole. But Terrell was raped. He was paraded around the prison naked. And this is from other correctional officers who knew where I worked or whatever at the gym. And they would tell me these things that what happened to Terrell. And I remember one prison guard after Terrell had took his life, he just said, I really, really want to tell you, I'm really sorry for the horrible things that they did to Terrell. Now, I can go on and on about the different things, but, you know, Terrell tried to take his life twice, once in Northampton County Prison. He took, he saved up some of his psychotic medication, and he would spit it out in a cup. And 2 days after he was on life support, the warden happened to call me saying, you need to go to the hospital because your son's on life support. And what they told me, when they found him, they kicked his jaw. So at that point, they broke Terrell's jaw. In the second time when he was in state prison, somehow he was able to get 3 razor blades, 3, you know, those fixed disposable razors. He stood on top of a table, undid his prison, the jumper they wear, and he took one razor, broke in half, and cut his neck to his ears 3 times. He swallowed 2 of the razors, and then he took the other razor and he cut from his wrist all up to his forearm, both of them. There's so many times that Charles tried to take his life. I know it was God or something was watching over to try to, to save Terrell. But for all the years that he was in prison, for everything that they did, they always denied him going to trial. It was just too much for Terrell. And so, like I said, he got out on August 8th. By the 20th, he took his life. He just couldn't take it anymore. So.
But it's so huge what you're telling. It's so... I have no words for that, you know, that it all can happen in prison, that and the prison system is so smart in manipulation that this all can happen on a legal way almost.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable, and I can understand that somebody cannot survive this.
Yeah. And if you had met Terrell, if you could have met him, one person who knew Terrell would say if Jesus had a son, it would be Terrell. Terrell was so gentle. He was such a nice person. He would do anything for you.
And mention how if you saw like a ladybug outside, he would tell you not to
smell. Yeah, I don't know if you can hear what my son just said. He said, let's say there was a ladybug that was walking around and he didn't want you to kill it. He'll put it outside to make sure it was okay. But he was just such a nice son. And I just feel so bad. I think about all the things that he went through. And like my son, my youngest son, Kai here, you know, his 20s is supposed to be his best years, but here he's in prison based on a lie that a woman had said. It was an older white woman, and she lied, and that's what happened. So.
Now, how do the both of you, you and your son, how do you cope with this now?
Well,
I mean, you have all these memories. It's your son. It's your brother. It all happened. How do you look at the country? How do you look at your life?
A lot of stress from having my son in prison. I had a heart attack. I also had a stroke. So the stress was unreal. And his paid attorney even said several times that Terrell was innocent. So I don't know why they continue to go after Terrell the way they did. We're assuming that Terrell had saw one of the cops, the arresting officer, in a situation that he was dealing things with little girls. So we think that that cop was going after Terrell and to keep him in prison, no matter what. And it was just, and, but as far as how I feel about it, one of my sons, my 27-year-old Amari, he found Terrell when Terrell had killed himself. And Amari, he goes back to that moment over and over and over again. And so and he was very close to Terrell. And it's just really hard. One of my sons, I didn't see for 3 years. He's living with me now, but it just took, you know, so much out of us. And I feel bad for Kai, you know, not able, because Kai and Terrell, they played the goose around, and Kai was denied all that. So it's...
Yeah, you even mentioned how protectors. Oh yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and there was a point where, from the short time frame when he actually was released, it was protective services, right? Mm-hmm. They even told Terrell to his face and said, "You are a threat to your own brother." So what they were doing was they were trying to separate our family. So. At this point, the system, it has just become so tyrannical. The fact that they're able to get away with such horrible things, it really goes to show you that, wow, like, I cannot believe that we are living in a society that deems things like this normal. So
yeah, that scares me too, that, you know, because it's all known. If I look on the internet, if I look on social media, I see all kinds of articles, you know, I needed articles, books for my book that I'm writing about the system, and it was so easy for me to find all kinds of sources, resources. Human Rights Watch wrote about it, Amnesty International, it's well known and still goes on, and that's so confrontational, you know. It's in a way, it all can happen, and everybody knows about it.
It's like the norm.
Yeah,
you know,
that's scary.
Yeah, go ahead. What?
Well, that's scary. It is the norm, you know, that if society thinks that you are doing bad, we can ask what is bad. That's already something we cannot really answer. What you see in the streets with the militarized police, it's like Iran, a totalitarian regime. You cannot make mistakes, because when you do, you get punished until torture, you know, and that's really, it's so shocking. For me, it's very, very shocking that all this can happen, and, you know, everybody knows, and it goes on and on, and
There's so much injustice in this country, and people walk over it like it's trash, you know. And even now, with a lot of these prisoners, even in Massachusetts, there's prisoners that have been abused, that have been deprived. There's things that have happened to these prisoners in the last year and a half that no one has even gone in and met with some of these prisoners. Mm. They've gone in to meet with others. To me, make it a whole day and meet with all these prisoners that are being affected. What happens is people go in, a lot of these law firms, lawyers, they go in, they meet with a few here and there. Politicians, the same thing. They meet with maybe 5, 6, or 7 of them. And in one case where there was a riot at the prison, they met with like 40 prisoners who were affected by unprovoked attacks after the riot ended, and they moved the troublemakers out. But they went and they met with 40. Well, there were many more than 40 that were unprovoked, but they were attacked unprovoked by an unprovoked group. And instead of meeting with all of them, they met with a few. So it's almost like, okay, we're concerned with these few, but we could care less about the rest of you. It's just enough to make themselves go before the media and say, we met with these 40 people. But so many others were affected, and to this day, there are some that have not even been seen to find out even what's going on with them, what they look like, what's happened to them.
But I think
that's this country. That's the way people are, just to make sure that everybody knows they met with somebody. But they didn't meet with all of them. So some of them have been seen and some of them are being helped, while others are just sitting there still in their cells 22 to 24 hours a day. We don't know if they're bruised. We don't know what their condition is. And these people are not going to go in and meet with them, but they'll meet with others who have gone through the same thing, maybe some less, maybe some worse. It doesn't make sense.
Well, it does make sense, not for us, but it does make sense for the parties in politics and economy who benefit from mass incarceration, because as you mentioned many times, Leona, there is no oversight, there's no control on what is happening behind the walls. We do know it by articles, etc., but what you see is that there are so many advocacy groups, there are so many groups, there are so many organizations still in mass incarceration maintained. So there is a reason why, and I think that has to do with all that money that is made out of it, the corporations, politics who get money from corporations, and corporations are not responsible for the welfare of the incarcerated people. Nobody is, in fact.
Can I interrupt real quick? I apologize. It's just you point out a note about how much money. Since my son, for one thing, out here in Pennsylvania, all the prisons, the state prisons, they're all privately owned. But the one thing I found out with Terrell, since he had mental illness, they would get $1,000 a day for keeping Terrell in prison. So it's a moneymaker.
That's an obvious. We know that, and a lot of people know it, but they're not doing anything about it. More people need to get involved in eliminating all these factors, because what's happening is people talk about it, they know about it, but they're not doing anything about it. And then when we or other advocates try to do something and try to get them to join in, to sign petitions or to call the representatives or the senators or whatever, they don't do it. Mm-hmm. And that's sad, because we could see a big difference and a quick difference if more people would get involved.
Yeah, but I think it also has to do with the mindset in society, because the system is embedded in society. It's an outcome of society on political level, economic level, but also social level. When you think about the racial problems, when you think about how militarized police in the streets is, it all is a reflection of what you see back inside the prison system. So I think, you know, the system developed in society. So I think prison reform also should happen by reform of the mindset in society, that people see that rehabilitation of incarcerated people is the only way to heal the offenders and the victims and the society. That's restorative justice. That's the only way that works. Another way doesn't work. But they first have to get rid of that mindset that that judging of who is good and who is bad. Let's first see that we all are human beings with backgrounds and, you know, meeting the human being behind the crime, what I'm always talking about. And that's what I do in my work here in the Netherlands. I meet the human being behind the crime. I don't judge it because that I'm not a court. You know, I'm a therapist. So I meet the human being, and then the both of us are going to look what has happened in his life, what was good, what went wrong, what needs rehabilitation, restoration, and then he gets more and more insight, and then he gets to insight and understanding of what went wrong, what his crime was, etc. That's the only way. This leads nowhere. Mass incarceration only leads to, what I said, filling the pockets of the corporations, and the corporations pay a lot of money to politicians, by the lobbyists, etc. And that's a nasty game, because that is making money out of torturing people and their families.
Exactly.
And I find that very harsh to say that out loud, that, you know, that money is made by torturing and dehumanizing people. That's beyond words for me. Even animals don't do that.
Sorry, KK, can I say something? Okay. All right. And the really jacked up part about it is that they ruin people's lives by putting them in prison. And then when they get released, if they're even lucky enough to get released, they ruin their life again, because now they have this label on them. Oh, this guy's a murderer. This is that. And I'm not saying that everybody in prison is arrested. We have a lot of, I'm not saying that everyone that is in prison is innocent. We have a lot that are. So now it's not really fair, because if you get an innocent person that was falsely accused of a crime, their life gets ruined from seeing their family or friends because they have a label on them. And then when they get out, now they have a hard time getting a job, because the manager is going to say, I don't want a murderer working for me. And that could be a false label. So not only do they mess up your life, they put this label on you and it sticks with you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, you always are cursed, and you stay cursed, so you never can pay your debt. And what I also saw is that when people get released and go to halfway houses, half houses, or then that's just as evil as the system. There are even people who get a chance to go on parole, to go through a process in a halfway house, and in the end they say, well, let me go back to prison, because that's at least that it's clear in there. The halfway houses also are breaking people down. And that's the whole thing. It's about revenge and anger and power, and that has nothing to do with rehabilitation or whatsoever. And I think even when somebody has committed murders, but he can rehabilitate, and he should have a chance to rehabilitate. Not only for himself, but also for society. And if somebody is not able to rehabilitate, then that's the reason to keep somebody in prison. But you cannot say, you cannot keep going on with revenge or retaliation for that crime. There is also a time behind after the crime.
And you know, things is, a lot of these people, even lawyers, which to me doesn't show that they demonstrate that they're really good lawyers, when somebody is in a position in prison, they're crying out for help because they're on a block they shouldn't be on. Say they're in solitary and they shouldn't be in solitary. They automatically, people that are these prisoners are reaching out to, they automatically assume that prisoner must have did something to be in the position he's in or she's in. To me, that is judgmental, and that is inappropriate, and that is poor judgment on the parts of these people who are being reached out to, because a lot of them assume, and that's why a lot of them say, well, we can't help, we can't do this, we can't do that, when in fact, that prisoner or those prisoners, human rights, not only civil rights, human rights are being violated seriously, and no one's taking it to heart because they're assuming that that person must have done something to be in that situation. And we have a lot of that happening too. And not only in Massachusetts, I'm sure, Holly, I'm sure with Joe being as long as he was, you've probably seen the same thing. They don't mm-hmm. take it serious. They don't take it serious enough. They don't. Yeah. It's like being in court, and it's like listening to people lie in court about a defendant and not being able to do anything about it because, first of all, the defendant's lawyer is not cross-examining the way he should or she should, and they're not asking their client, is this true or what's going on? Can you explain this mm-hmm. to me? They automatically just assume. And we have a country that is so full of assumptions that they make an ass out of you, as they say. They're assuming, and they're coming out with all these, they're being more problematic than the people who are actually harming the victims inside the prison. Because they're judging, and they're not even questioning their own clients. And a lot of these lawyers depriving clients because of who they know. And there is so much injustice. And the injustice is not only with these people in the penal system that are overseeing, but it's also with our law, our lawyers. It's also with a lot of people that are supposed to be out there advocating for these very people. A lot of people. Now, we have a listener call, and they usually just listen, but do you have anything to say, 1111? Please feel free to join in. No, I guess they're just listening. Okay, but these are the things that happen in this country, and there's no need for it. You know, when I read in the Bible in Ephesians 6, when they talk about wrestling against spirits, not flesh and blood, but wrestling against spirits of darkness, we have in this country, I'm beginning to believe it, because we have people who have no heart whatsoever, who have the ability to help somebody that's in deep, deep trouble, that is hurting so badly, and yet they're going to ignore it like it's nothing. Whether they think that person is justified in being where they are or not, they should at least meet with these people to find out what's going on. And if Terrell was getting the proper treatment while he was inside, they knew he had some kind of psychological problems or whatever, they should have automatically had the medical providers that are contracted with the agency meet with these people that are in there. They should at least go and meet with them just to see how their day is going, to find out mm-hmm. how serious they are. But they don't even do that. They sit on their feet.
I would have to call the psychiatrist that was they had different psychiatrists assigned to the prisons, and I would find out who they were, and I would talk to them, beg them to go see Terrell, and they never did it. When they moved up to state prison, they didn't bother. They said that, you know, that they don't need to talk to Terrell, and that, you know, and after he had did this, you know, try to kill himself with the razor and swallow them, the caseworker, she called me, and she said, if Terrell had just waited till we had someone on staff that he could have talked to. So it was Terrell's fault.
How in the world do they, you know, this is so childish. These are the professionals that we're dealing with. Why couldn't he wait? Why didn't he wait to hang himself this year and at least meet with the psychiatrist when he had mm-hmm. some time? You know, it's like, what in the world is going on with these people? You have somebody that's right now so stable. And as you said, he had tried to commit suicide previously. That's not a time to say, well, you know, he should wait. No one should mm-hmm. wait.
But I think that has to do with that nobody feels responsible for the welfare of the incarcerated people, because they see them as less than human. That's where it all starts. So for a psychiatrist or a guard or whatever, he doesn't care. He is not involved. It doesn't matter. The incarcerated people don't matter, and that's the whole problem. If they would matter, if they would be, as human beings, be equal to all of us, then everything would change. Then everything would be decent. But nobody takes responsibility, and that's the most dangerous thing that you can have, because what you see now is a role reversal. You know, on the street, somebody commits a crime, he becomes an offender, he commits crime, and then he gets punished. Then he comes into the system, but there he becomes a victim. And the same crimes are committed in the prison as on the street, but in the prison, it's legal, it can be done. the mm-hmm. torturing, what they do with the food, sometimes even beating people, incarcerated people to death. We know since the 50s that solitary confinement longer than 15 days is a form of torture. It's mm-hmm. you know, it's scientific proven, but it doesn't matter because the people in prison are not people anymore. So you can do with them what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes me very angry.
Yeah.
And what if you would have had a session with a psychologist or a psychiatrist, what would have changed? On daily basis, they are tortured. The whole environment of iron, of steel, or is dehumanizing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hell, you know, all together.
I can't imagine.
When you look
so
at
many people committing suicide.
Yeah, and when you look at the prison in Norway, that one is a model prison. Even the building is different, with windows that people can see when it's spring, when it's autumn or winter. You know, they try to keep incarcerated people in domestic life. Because mm-hmm. domestic life is waiting for them after a release, you know. And so, but in the United States prisons, they don't have anything to do with domestic life. They don't have anything to do with responsibility. All these things, which makes it so important to succeed after release, they are all, you know, taken away. And then they expect after 20, 30 years that somebody can, you know, be released and be a good member of society. That's impossible. I couldn't do it. Nobody can.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there are some exceptions, but those are exceptions. It's so sad. It's so, well, barbaric, really. This, yeah, I have no
way. You know, I look at all the U.S. senators, the Congress, you know, even the state reps. I look at all the people in the government, the numbers, huge numbers in this country. And I wonder how much is any of them doing? Because with all the monies that are going into these government officials and those with those have some kind of influence, and nothing's being done in these areas, why do we need them? Why do people need to spend all these billions of dollars on people that are supposed to be running the government, running the country? They're sitting back and they're allowing people to be stuck behind those prison walls. And like I said, once you take somebody's freedom from them, that's punishment. They're paying for they're paying for whatever they did wrong. But they not only take them out of society and put them in cages, but they also deprive them of anything that they try to do. They also abuse them. They violate them. They do everything to make it. It's almost like taking a baby doll, a deranged person, taking a doll that was given to them and just tearing it apart piece by piece until that doll is nothing but a piece of rags.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what we have in our prisons today. And if they don't commit suicide while they're inside, then surely that somebody is going to provide them with homicide. And if that doesn't happen, when they come out, they're so messed up from being inside the prison and not getting the treatment they should be getting, that they come out and they either kill themselves or they turn into vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
This prison is, I know, people that were spent years in prison who are out now but cannot leave their bedroom. They can't leave their house. They're so... All these years they were caged. They cannot go outside their homes. One woman, she told me her husband, she would go out. She'd go to work, and she'd come home, and she'd find him in the same room. He couldn't leave that room. That's how damaged he was. This is not only with one person. This is with many people that come out of prison. They spend all those years inside, a lot of them in cages, and I'm sure that some of you saw that man that was in solitary confinement for 600 days. And he came out barking like a dog.
Yeah.
They messed him up so badly. What kind of punishment is this supposed to be? Get rid of these prisons. Start looking at long-term residential treatment facilities with professionals like yourself, Marion, and others like you, who really have the heart, who have the skills, who are professional, who experience, I mean, everything. Get those kind of people in these long-term residential treatment facilities. Get rid of these guards and these prison officials. They have no education, no heart, no experience.
And reopen, psychiatric hospitals again. That's so important. That's so important.
Exactly. They need to, and they need to improve them. Unfortunately,
yeah.
They don't.
Because here it's only, you know, if you commit a crime, you go to prison. What we see in the Netherlands, we have forensic psychiatric hospitals. We have normal psychiatric hospitals, but the forensic ones are especially for people who have a disorder or trauma and commit a crime. So they have to do as short as possible time in the prison. We always keep it as short as possible because of the harm incarceration do, detention damage, and then they have to go to a forensic psychiatric hospital to get treatment. They are forced to do that because they have disorders or they might have trauma. It has to be healed. Not having that, you know, closing all these hospitals, and that's asking for all kinds of problems, and then torturing people who are the most vulnerable, who need help. Torturing them, that's insane. It's really insane. For money.
Opening these institutions, they need to get rid of these prisons, and they need to open these institutions, and they need to bring in specialists. They don't need to bring in just anybody. I'll tell you, I had a cousin years and years ago in Worcester that worked for a state hospital. She was not that experienced to be working with these people. I'm telling you, some people have psychiatric problems themselves. Not to say that all of us are like that. But that's what I'm saying. They need to reopen these institutions, these psychiatric hospitals, and they need to bring in specialists, people that really know what they're doing, not just anybody. And what's happening in this country too, even in the penal system, is that there's a lot of people getting positions in these facilities only because they're related to someone that works in the facility or they're friends with somebody that works in the facility. It's all because of, you know, and this is what's happening in these penal system because these people are not experienced. They just know the right people to get in. And
what I sometimes read, you know, about what guards see as their purpose of the work is not the welfare of the incarcerated people, but keeping them in place, keeping them caged in order to keep society safe. That's what they always say. So their purpose is not rehabilitation or whatever, but it's keeping society safe. And many times I hear them saying, yes, that they feel like a hero, you know. Oh, today I had my shift and again a day that I kept society safe. And then they have this power of the uniform. And, you know, there are sometimes also guards who have their own traumas, issues from the youth or whatever. And they put on their uniform and with that they put on their power. And they can do with the incarcerated people what they want to do because the incarcerated people are outlawed. They have no rights. They have only rights for the public, but they have no real rights. Mm-hmm. Because outside in society, the rights are taken away and inside the prison rights are manipulated. So they have no rights. So you can do with them what you want. And if you then wear a uniform, so you wear power, then you get very dangerous situations. And that's what we see with that torturing and all that.
You know, Holly's from Pennsylvania. So, Holly, you probably remember the case. Back in 2007, I believe it was August of 2007, there were three people in prison in the hole. And it was Joe Kappa, Joe Holguin, and Clifford Finney. You remember that?
Yeah, I can't remember exactly the whole story, but I think one of them won a case against the prison for Northampton County. No?
No, these three men all ended up dying. I had to go out to Pennsylvania to get together with some other groups in Pennsylvania. We had a rally outside of Smithfield Prison in Huntington. And while we were outside that prison, we were trying to get help for these prisoners. I even called ACLU a number of times. I even contacted Leanna Washington, and some of the other people in the state house. None of them helped until the last one.
Wow.
When Clifford Finney died, and these people, these three were supposed to have allegedly to have committed suicide. Although the day that Joe Hoagland was put in Frackville prison facility, that day they had him there for some time. And when he came back, that's when he committed suicide. But
wow.
I remember I had to fill out all kinds of paperwork because I ended up also, we spoke at the Capitol Rotunda in Harrisburg on these three prisoners. But what happened was after the third one died, was to allegedly have committed suicide, was Clifford Finney. That's when Leanna Washington came forward and spoke to the media and said if she had any idea this was going on, she would have had an investigation. Well, she knew that I was not only calling her office, I was emailing her. So she was talking about these prisoners being cremated. So I emailed her and I said, you need to meet with the family members because the prisoners were not cremated. And then when we had the rally at the Capitol Rotunda, her spokesperson was there.
Mm-hmm.
I asked her, the spokesperson, what do you have against me? And she asked me who I was. And when I told her, she said, you're the one that called the senator a liar. I said, I would never call Senator a liar. I was trying to keep her from embarrassing herself. Because none of the bodies were cremated, and had she met with the family members, she would have known that. So a lot of times these politicians, they sit back and they wait until something terrible happens, and all of a sudden they don't know anything about what was going on.
Mm.
When in fact, when we try to get them involved to prevent a suicide or a homicide, that's when they completely don't have time. They completely ignore. So that's why I say I don't know why we even pay for politicians in this country or any government person when they can't take the time out to investigate.
Yeah.
And that's what happened in Pennsylvania. Three people died. It could have been prevented. Had somebody had listened to me or listened to one of us that were out there advocating and trying to get help. I had lawyers. I had Jerry Spence from Colorado. They say he's hardly ever lost a case. I contacted him. He's a professor. So what he did, he referred me, and he sent an email to his friend. I can't think of his name now. He had a daughter. He sent an email to his friend, and he copied me to it. And his friend and his friend's daughter were willing to help with the issue in Pennsylvania if a lawyer in Pennsylvania got it started. They said they would help in any way they could. No one could get a lawyer in Pennsylvania to start it. The same thing that's happening here in this country, I mean, in this state, no lawyer would take on this case when, in fact, other lawyers from other states were willing to work with them on it to file class action lawsuit. That goes to show you the differences between lawyers and goes to show you the differences between our government leaders and workers. And it's sad because too many people have died, and I can only blame it on the very people we have tried to get help from. And it continues. We know what the DOC is like around the country. We know what the Department of Corrections is like. But we would not expect that of our politicians or our lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the blame comes. Too many unnecessary deaths. Too many people giving up their lives and losing their lives. And as you said, Holly, if Jesus, your son was one of those who could have been like Jesus. But this is the thing. Those are the ones they pick on. The those are the ones they pick on. They pick on these coward officials and guards. They're so cowardly that they can't go after the tough ones in the prisons that are causing all the problems. They go after the meek and lowly ones. They go after the ones that are not a problem.
Sorry to cut you off. And Tro was 6'3", but you could just tell that he was very timid, and he was easily picked on.
There are people like that. They just don't want to be. They want to stay out of the line. The line. What do you call it? The limelight.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to be on radar. They try to stay off of it. But some of these people that oversee in the prison, who are so punkish, they want to look big amongst their peers, but they're too cowardly to go after the tough guys. So they go after the ones that are quiet, that are meek, that try to stay to themselves, that are no problem at all. Those are the ones that they want to go after because it's easier for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's cowards.
Mm.
It's So I wish our caller would say something, because I would really be interested in hearing what they have to say. No? Okay. See, these are the things that happen in the country. People listen. A lot of people agree. A lot of people disagree. But no one actually, a lot of people don't speak up. They don't say anything, which is like saying nothing.
And I think that all the states are separate from each other, because I do know that North Dakota has a prison system, and that is really developing in the right direction. They have Norway as an example, and they are really making changes, and that's the prison system in North Dakota. And then I would think, okay, when that works so good, why doesn't it, you know, go further? But that doesn't happen. It stays only there.
Yeah. You know, Marian, people have gone out to your country and to other countries from the United States to see how your prison system works. And still, I don't understand why, seeing all these things and seeing how successful all the countries are, why they haven't started doing projects here. Why they haven't started doing some kind of projects where they can even try it out to see how it can work here. Again, like you say, it's about money, prisons for profit. This country is all about money.
Yeah, and the mindset, you know. I mean, every country has its own mindset, its own history, its own culture, of course. So it's difficult to compare countries. But that, you know, you should have to go back to your own, look at your own country and say, hey, what's our culture now? What's our mindset? How do people on the streets look at each other? Because that's an important part of the system as a mirror of society. When you look at the prison system, it also reflects what's happening in society. It's not a separated thing. It's not an isolated system. It's part of society. So that you should ask society, why do we do this? How do we think? How do we look at each other? What's important for us? What are our values that we have this system? And do we agree with it, or would we want to change? And when we don't want to change, why not? Those are very important questions for as a society to ask itself, I think. Because they have been in Norway and they have been here, so they know how it works here, and it's much more successful. So, and the recidivism number is much lower. So why not that change? What does it tell about the country?
Yeah. Sad, because if there's a war, then you see everybody coming together to be saved, to fight against the enemies. They come together. They don't care what race you are or whatever. They come together because they're scared now. They're running scared because here we are being attacked by another country, so we have to work together. But when that's all over with it, right back to racism, right back to genders, right back to...
If there's no mutual enemy, then you get all this problem in your own society again.
It's crazy. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't.
It doesn't make sense, because that would mean that the country only can function when there is a war overseas. That would be insane. It should solve its own problems first. That's what China said, I think, 6 weeks or 2 months ago. When America was pointing at China and saying to China, hey, you have these concentration camps for the Uyghurs, the Muslims, and then China said, well, look at yourself first, and look what you are doing with the black people on the streets, shooting them, locking them up, before you point to other people. And I think they are right.
Can I interrupt for one quick second? I apologize. Just talking about how it is for black people here in America, especially if you're a black male. Two of my oldest sons and people, other black males they talk to at work, they're discussing about wearing bulletproof vests. And that's sad. Who thinks about, oh, before I go out the house, I better put my bulletproof vest on? But that's the talk, especially amongst black males, which is crazy. That's how much they fear for their life. That's how much they worried that a cop might, you know, if they get pulled over, they might get shot. So I really feel bad that my oldest two sons feel that way, and the fact that other black males feel that way as well.
Yeah, and that makes me think of what you see in prison is an extension of what you see in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Because that same fear, what your son has been through in the system, is what you now describe on the streets in society. And that's why I say the system, in a way, is an extension of society. So prison reform means, in fact, reform of the mindset of society.
Mm-hmm.
You can't separate it. You can't separate those two, I think.
You know what makes sense? I mean, what doesn't make sense to me, too, is the fact that when you can agree with me or disagree, but I'm sure you're going to agree. When we do something good and we see the smile on another person's face, or we do something, we're interacting and everything is going so well, we're getting pleasure out of that. You know, we're feeling good about it. There's
mm-hmm.
no war, there's no yelling, there's no shouting. Everything is so peaceful and unified. So how can people want something totally opposite of that? How can people out there want to see so much division and hatred and anger? And I picture the two faces, one of calmness and smile, and the other one's of anger and, ugh, like they want to just tear you apart. That's why I say we're wrestling against spirits, dark spirits, good spirits, and evil spirits, because this, I cannot imagine anybody wanting to take away. I'm looking out the window today. We have a beautiful day, the green trees, the blue skies, the white clouds, the trees blowing in the wind. Everything's peaceful. And then I'm looking at, if we were all this peaceful in society, if we were all just enjoying what God has given us, the beauty, the calmness, the unity, then we would be so happy. But there's
mm-hmm.
people out there that want just the opposite. They want so much hatred. They want people to be miserable. And I can't imagine any human being wanting that kind of destruction, wanting that kind of hatred and evil. I can't imagine. I cannot imagine. It just doesn't make sense.
There is a lot of fear. Hate and retaliation and revenge and angriness is always based on fear. So there is in the foundation, there is so much fear for the unknown, I don't know, losing one's own position or possession or I don't know, but there is a lot of fear in society.
I remember.
And also in the system.
I remember one time here, and it was from, I think the woman was in Georgia. There was a serial killer. He had killed a few women. And he went to this house, I guess, in Georgia. And he was going to kill this woman. And I don't know where she got the strength, but she talked to him. She talked to him like you and I are talking. And she talked about, you know, her children who were at the time were in school, I guess. She talked about God and everything else. By the time she got through talking to him calmly, peacefully and everything, he told her to go. He told her to go call the police. He stayed there and he let her go. And I remember that. I'll never forget that day because that the woman talked about it after. But this was a woman that was saved simply by being calm, being, you know, caring.
A human.
But I want to say right now, we have a minute left. So, Marianne, once again, can you give your information and then Holly?
Okay. Yes. You can find me on Facebook. I have my website, www.deeperjustice.com. I'm on Facebook. I am on LinkedIn. I'm also now on Instagram. I have to figure that out. And I'm finishing my book, Lost in the System, and that's about, and it's a deconstruction or an analysis of the prison system and how it's embedded in society.
Okay. As far as my information is Holly Alston. You can find me on Facebook. So you know it's me. You're gonna see me and sitting next to my son Terrell. And the picture was taken 2 days before he took his life. So look for Holly Alston. And you'll see, you know, me and my son.
And I want to thank your other son again. Kyle, no, what was his name? I'm sorry.
Kyle, yeah, he went outside. He has to water some of his vegetables.
please thank him for being.
Oh, you want to say something real quick? He came in. You want to say something real quick, Kai? I don't know if they can hear you.
Just tell Kai.
Oh, Kai wants you to keep doing your thing and spread the awareness.
Great. You tell Kai we'd like to have him on the show sometime again and to stay strong. I know it must be heartbreaking to have his only brother leave him as he did, but he's strong, and I'm sure you're going to make it through. You're a warrior, Holly. And thank you both for coming on, because I really appreciated this. And Marian, as always, Marian, I thank you for being on, and I'm still looking forward to reading that book once it's published. So you just keep doing what you're doing. And thank you so much for giving us the opportunity every week to have you on.
Thank you, I really appreciate it.
You're full of wisdom, knowledge, and you have so much. I mean, people really enjoy listening to you when you come on, and I really enjoy having you on. So I want to thank you both and Kyle as well for being on the show today, and I look forward to next Wednesday.
Okay. Thank you, too.
We are now getting ready to sign off. Thank you, everyone, and we will be having you back on the show Sunday afternoon and hopefully next Wednesday. Thanks again, everyone. Have a good day and have a blessed day.
All right.
Thank you, too. Bye-bye.